4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret. My co-host, Veronica Rickert, will be back with me on Monday. Coming up, we'll talk to our news guy, Noah Ovshinsky, about the big stories he's expecting to be watching in Wisconsin throughout 2015. First, in 2004, journalist Thomas Frank published a now-famous book that spent months on the bestsellers list. It was called What's the Matter with Kansas?, focused on the state's shift from being an important player in the left-wing populist movement to an overwhelmingly conservative state. Recently, especially after the most recent election in which Governor Walker beat Mary Burke by a 6-point margin and conservative majorities in the legislature grew, critics on the left have talked about Wisconsin in similar ways. Well, this coming Monday, Governor Scott Walker will be inaugurated for his second term, and we'd like to hear what you have to say at 800-642-1234. Do you think that Wisconsin has made a significant and long-term shift to the political right? If so, is that good news or bad news as you see it? You can call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Paul Fanlon's with us. He's editor of the Capital Times. He drew comparisons between Wisconsin's conservative shift and Kansas's in an article late last year. He's been writing about the political landscape since then. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, Wisconsin has been purple, at least in the view of national political commentators, for some years now. Is that changing? Are we moving toward a conservative state as a whole?
I certainly think we have in the last few years. I think the central change that we've seen in over the time that Governor Walker's been in office is a sense of one side winning and winning narrowly, relatively narrowly, and then what I call a go-for-broke approach to governing, so that the 46, 47, 48% of people on the other side, who are still out there, really have had not much voice in what happens in the Capitol in the last few years. And so that's been, I think, the most pronounced thing, having watched state politics over the last 30-some years firsthand, that is dramatically different. What that means for the longer term, I think, is still unclear.
So why have Republicans had so much success in state elections?
Well, I think I wrote a major piece a couple of weeks ago talking about what I call the politics of resentment. I think there was a lot of agony, a lot of economic agony in the state in 2007, 2008, the Great Recession period coming out of that. And Republicans did a brilliant job. I give them high marks for their tactics and their use of language and their ability to focus the electorate against public workers, against teachers, and they really did a great job of making and playing off that resentment and winning the election in 2010, and then again this year for governor, and increasing their margins in the legislature. At the same time, I think watching the parties over the decades, there's always been an aggressive partisanship going on. But the Republicans, this version of Republican leadership in Wisconsin, has been doing more on aggressive reapportionment, redistricting to favor Republicans, and also things like voter ID, which I think a lot of us on the left think is a form of voter suppression. It's to suppress Democratic votes. So they've been very effective at that, too, and really focused on that.
So Republicans, you're saying effective messaging in the aftermath of the Great Recession. Democrats, did they fall down when it came to that kind of messaging?
I think they did. I think the protests here in 2011, if you were in Madison and saw the thousands of people gathered around the Capitol, you may have misinterpreted that as being a movement that had wider appeal than beyond than in Greater Madison and in public employee circles, I don't think it really resonated very well with people across the state who had seen their benefits limited or their wages frozen.
There's been a lot of talk about increasing polarization in the state, people more locked in to one side or the other, and to more extreme positions on that side. Are we at a point where we don't even know how to talk to each other about things like this and communicate across the partisan boundary effectively?
I hate to say it, but I think we are, and it'll take some pendulum swing from where we sit today to start to talk to one another again. Dale Schultz, the Republican state senator who had some very strong things to say on his way out of office, is an example of that. In Congress, you have a representative like Congressman Petri retiring. He would look like a centrist or even a moderate Democrat by today's Republican standards, replaced by Glenn Grothman, who is of the Tea Party right. So there really isn't a lot of communication across the aisle. And again, I go back to the point, and I won't, this is the last time I'll make it, but there isn't a lot of interest by Walker, by Governor Walker, or the Republican leadership in involving Democrats in a serious way. And to me, that's unprecedented, looking back over three and a half decades.
So you would say, if we contrast a Democratic Governor Jim Doyle or a Republican like Tommy Thompson, you saw more reaching across the aisle than you're seeing from Republicans today?
Particularly, Tommy Thompson wanted everyone. He wanted to be liked by everybody, and he wanted everyone's vote. So once he defeated an incumbent, Tony Earle, in the 1980s, each successive election, he increased his margin to the point that he won overwhelmingly, and that was important to him. That is not important to this Republican Party.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We have Bill on the line in Milwaukee. Bill, hi.
Hi. You know, you shouldn't just focus on Walker. I think the Republicans wrote his coattails, but we have more Republicans in the legislature today because of Walker. And Walker is a fabulous governor. And why anybody be against him is beyond me. But the entire nation went Republican. We shouldn't forget that either.
Bill, thanks a lot for the call. A couple of points there. One, that some of the Republican shift we've seen in Wisconsin has been in big Republican wave years like 2010, Paul.
Absolutely. And I think the caller also makes a good point that this was a national Republican wave. I have an upcoming column in which I suggest that the pendulum is not going to start to turn until the Republican argument about the size of government is not as important as the argument about who controls government. And the Republican argument nationwide about government being too big and too expensive and not very well run has been in the mainstream in the political ecosystem since Ronald Reagan, and it really has really been accepted by a large number of people.
Well, I want to throw a counterexample at you. President Obama won Wisconsin in both of his elections. Senator Tammy Baldwin, considered one of the more liberal members of the Senate, won here in the last presidential election year. Is this a sign that maybe we're not on this trend to the right? We're just kind of oscillating here?
Well, that would be if one is a progressive, that would be a hopeful argument that that in a presidential year where more people come out, obviously those who pay attention to politics know the sharp contrast between a presidential year and an off-year election and how much better Republicans historically do then. And that was remarkable and startling, and there is an awful lot of Wisconsin history going back to Bill Proxmire and Russ Feingold electing unpredictable unusual candidates. In some ways, Tammy Baldwin was that, coming as a liberal from Dane County, from Madison, in fact. So, yes, I mean, I think that it's hard to know what 1, 2, 3, and 4 years out is going to look like.
Monday is re-inauguration day for Governor Scott Walker. We're talking to Paul Fanlon with the Capital Times about, among other things, whether Wisconsin is making a significant, maybe a long-term shift to the political right, and we'll get into what that might mean if it does from his perspective and from your perspective. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think that Wisconsin is moving to the right, maybe staying there for a while, and what are the implications of that, good or bad, for the state? Call in 800-642-1234 or email talk@wpr.org. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're continuing our conversation with Paul Fanlon. He's editor of the Capital Times, talking about whether Wisconsin is making a long-term shift to the right politically and what that means for the state. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are we moving to the right in Wisconsin, or is there a pendulum swinging back and forth? Would you like to see the state move to the right politically? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Before we go back to callers, Paul, part of why you've been writing these pieces as self-described someone coming from the left, you're worried about this shift to the right. What in particular has you concerned?
Well, I think actually there's a few things. I'm concerned about the what I consider to be the undercutting of public education, both K-12 and the University of Wisconsin system, and the ability of the University of Wisconsin to continue to be a world-class research institution, given these tides of, interference. I'm concerned about the potential sale of state assets, which you see some signs of the appeal. The Republicans' love of privatization, which I don't think is necessarily always a good answer. I think the regulatory, the environmental, and reproductive rights terrain is also problematic for anyone. I would say not just from the left, but from the political center. This Republican government led by Governor Walker is quite far to the right relative to where Wisconsin has been historically. So those are some of the thoughts.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. We have Travis on the line in Green Bay. Travis, hi.
Yeah, hey, how's it going?
Good. What do you got for us?
I was just kind of wanting to get in on the discussion about kind of what you were saying before about the pendulum swinging back and forth between Republicans and Democrats. And that's something that I've noticed kind of since I hit voting age back in the first Bush-Gore election. And yeah, basically, I guess my piece is I just wanted to call in and say that I know I've voted Democrat in every election since I was able to vote, and at least in the upcoming presidential election, and even in this election we just had, the midterms, I didn't vote Democratic, and I don't really necessarily intend to, nor do I intend to vote Republican either. I think that I can only speak for myself and the people that I know. But most of the people that would lean left or Democrat feel that, when they voted for Obama, especially the second time, that they were really hoping that, you know, the whole idea of change politically was actually going to come. And it's kind of more centrist and more of the same. And maybe people just kind of feel like they've been sold out and nobody really is representing them on the left.
Travis, thanks a lot for the call. So saying that people, Democrats, especially those toward the left, Paul, aren't feeling represented by the candidates, the party of the Democrats in Wisconsin and beyond.
Well, I think that's a fair criticism. I think it's something that the Democrats are doing, continue to do a lot of soul searching about. Of course, it's as someone who has followed Barack Obama through the two elections, and I do a lot of reading about these sorts of things and follow what he's tried to do. When the Republican leaders announce in the first month of his first term that their primary goal is to prevent him from having a second term, it sort of sets up what seemed to me an almost impossible situation for him. I do think, though, that the left and the Democratic Party has not done a great job of articulating a master vision, which is what I alluded to before the break about the Democrats don't want a big government. What they want is an effective government that is controlled by ordinary people and their interests, and not by the wealthy. And that seems to be a message that is not particularly out there.
Now, years ago, Ed Garvey, longtime Democratic organizer, made the case that there wasn't really a Democratic Party in Wisconsin anymore. It was kind of a skeletal framework. They counted on public employee unions to do the work of mobilizing people, and the Republican Party has done a better job of owning that kind of thing themselves. Was there something to that then? Is there something to that now?
I think there was, and I think there is, and I think the Act 10, which was the major public union bill, a law of 2011, was devastating to a core Democratic constituency and a core Democratic component. I think Ed was right about that then and right about it now. But there's a tension, I think, among the left about going sort of primal in terms of being really outspoken in terms of some left-wing issues versus trying to moderate and appeal to the center and to the center-right and center-left. And that's something I think the party continues to grapple with.
We'll go back to our callers. We've got Josh with us in Eau Claire. Josh, hi.
Hi. I was just thinking that, you know, Scott Walker is the definite Tea Partier, and there's no middle ground with the Tea Party. You're either, you got a sure brain in that party. Before, with Thompson, as a Republican, you know, he didn't have to agree with everything the Republicans do now. With the Tea Party, you are stuck on one gear, and that's it. If you don't agree line item with everything, you're not in the Tea Party, and you're out.
Josh, thanks for the call. Josh, making the case that the Tea Party's moved the Republican Party to the right, and maybe that the legislature, Republicans in the legislature, have a party discipline. They tend to stick together on issues.
They absolutely do. They do a brilliant job of staying together on issues and punishing anyone who steps outside of that. I've said before, I've written before, that one of the things related to that that concerns me is that I've talked to many business leaders, people in prominent positions, people who could really make a difference in terms of the public discourse about the direction of politics in the state, and they seem to be reluctant to get out in front against this tide of far-right Republicanism. And I lament that and encourage them to step up more.
Well, I mean, do they see some benefit in at least some of the economic proposals from a Republican majority?
Perhaps. This is a state with high property taxes and high personal income taxes, but they also are concerned about having a healthy middle class of consumers for their products and are concerned about issues like the health of the University of Wisconsin, reproductive rights, environmental and consumer regulations. So I've heard them voice those. But there did seem to be, in the last gubernatorial election, there did seem to be a reluctance to kind of come out in sort of full-throated opposition to the Walker administration, because it is enormously powerful, having won three times now. And I just thought that was regrettable.
We'll go to Adam with us now in Janesville. Adam, hi.
Hi. I just had a question for the guest and maybe a comment. I come from the left, but what does he think about the fact that we have absolute polarity between our two state senators?
Between Ron Johnson and Tammy Baldwin, one viewed very conservative, one viewed very liberal.
That's an interesting question. I think it's a perfect microcosm of where the state is these days. That Ron Johnson came in and in a wave election. I was in Russ Feingold's office that fall before the election, and the numbers had hardened. And of course, Senator Johnson is a strong Tea Partier, and Senator Baldwin is anything but. And it's a reflection of this remarkable gulf between and this hyper-partisanship that exists in Wisconsin. I don't know what to say about it beyond that. Other than that, it indicates that, as you pointed out a few minutes ago, Rob, that if this state can elect, can vote for Barack Obama comfortably twice and elect Tammy Baldwin, that there is a major potential for a shift. It just feels that it's pretty far away here on the eve of the governor's second inauguration and an even more Republican and even more conservative legislature.
As we wrap up, what would Democrats and their supporters have to do to avoid becoming a permanent minority in Wisconsin politics?
That's interesting. I've written three or four times since the election, since the gubernatorial election, taking on various subjects. An upcoming column to which I alluded earlier, I'm talking about language and tactics. I think the right has done such a better job tactically talking about the size of government. I write in this column that we on the left, and I'm guilty of this as well, like to talk about income inequality. And I'm quoting an author in this column as saying, regular people don't talk about income inequality. They say they haven't had a pay raise in 4 years, or they got their health care cut back, or their wife got laid off. They talk in real people terms, and I think the Republicans do that really well. And I think the Democrats need to do better with language and tactics, but also I think the central point, and I think we may get there in the not too distant future, is the control of government. Who is the Walker administration, the Republicans? Who are they really listening to? Is it the Wisconsin Manufacturers of Commerce and wealthy out of state donors, or is it the rest of the ordinary people, regular people in Wisconsin?
We'll leave it there for now, Paul. Thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure.
That's Paul Fanlund, editor of the Capital Times, talking about whether Wisconsin is making a long-term shift to the political right as Governor Walker gets ready for his second inauguration on Monday. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert will be back with me on Monday. This is the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Co-host Veronica Rickert will be back with me on Monday. First, we're looking at what 2015 will bring for Wisconsin. A couple of important education-related bills, the ongoing debate over local control and frac sand mining, the Justice Department's investigation into the death of Dontre Hamilton, a few stories we're expecting to watch over the next year. Here to preview these and other expected news stories in the state in 2015 is Noah Ovshinsky. He's WPR's Assistant News Director. He joins us once a week to talk about the latest in Wisconsin news. Noah, welcome back.
It is good to be here, Rob, and Happy New Year.
Happy 2015 to you.
Wow.
Yeah.
2015.
Where did the time go?
Where did it go?
Well, there's going to be some stories that'll surprise us next year. They'll come completely out of nowhere. What are they going to be? No, I'm just kidding. But those are the unknown unknowns. We've got some known unknowns, stories that are kind of ongoing that we're expecting to track this next year.
We've got no knowns that we think we know. Mm-hmm. But you never know what we don't know.
Exactly.
But what we think we know is that there will be several issues that the legislature, the governor will be taking up. Of course, we're entering a budget cycle here,
right,
coming up in the next couple of weeks and into the spring. And that'll be a very, I think, interesting time for Wisconsinites. The legislature is looking at doing a lot of stuff covering a wide range of services here in the state.
And framing a lot of the stories we're going to be talking about, a larger Republican majority, widely viewed as a more reliably conservative majority in the Assembly and the Senate. Meanwhile, a reelected Republican governor with a potential to run for president.
Exactly. It's going to be a really interesting year. And we've already gotten a sense of what are some of the things that they're going to be looking at here in the coming weeks. One is there may be a revisiting of this debate over local control in the frac sand industry, which, you know, we've talked a lot about. It's an industry that has really exploded in Wisconsin in the last 3 years. And right now there's sort of a patchwork of regulations that control the industry, based on where the sand mine happens to be, county, city, township, etc. And there's an effort in the legislature, in particular, Republican State Senator Tom Tiffany, who would like to bring uniformity to this patchwork of regulations. In the last two sessions, he wanted to create statewide standards that will govern the industry. I think there's a good chance that he may come back in this next session and do something in order to bring more order to this patchwork of regulation.
And that's the case for that mining companies, their supporters, and others are making, that they need this kind of regulatory certainty, I guess.
Yeah, consistency. I mean, they want the regulations to be consistent so that, you know, that a sand mine in Trempealeau County will be treated the same as in Chippewa County. They think that that's good for the industry and it's good for economic development. Critics of the argument will argue, or rather the effort to bring these statewide standards, argue that it's essentially attack on local control. They say towns should be able to regulate the industry how they see fit, and that's the argument on that side.
So what kind of regulations have we seen at the local level when it comes to frac sand mining?
Yeah, when we're talking about these regulations, we're talking about things like limits on hours of operation, noise levels, infrastructure payments that companies have to make to counties, townships, and cities for the damage that maybe trucks have on the local infrastructure. Those are the kinds of things that we're talking about.
So Senator Tiffany likely to bring this up again. How would this be standalone legislation? How would this work?
It's unclear. That's one way he could reintroduce this legislation with a more conservative caucus. There's, you know, maybe a chance of getting bigger momentum with this. The other option would be, other than the traditional legislative route, and this is what critics worry Tiffany will do of this kind of legislation. They say that Tiffany could use his position on the Joint Finance Committee to essentially insert language in the budget that essentially does the same thing as what he's proposed in previous sessions. But it wouldn't be done through that traditional legislative process. It would be done through the budget process, which essentially is an up or down vote.
Right. And this is not new. I mean, we've seen budgets are mostly fiscal documents, but there's always talk, sometimes complaining over the other stuff that makes it into a budget.
Right. These last minute things that legislators stick in. And sometimes they're controversial, sometimes they're not. But it's certainly that. It's certainly, I think, a thing that critics of this kind of legislation, something that they point to with some concern.
Well, now you don't need a crystal ball for this next one. Republicans in the legislature have been saying they want to do something about the Government Accountability Board this year, even before the election. I think it was on the Assembly Republican agenda. What are they talking about? Why are they worried about GAB?
Right. So this is an agency that has taken really a lot of heat since, well, essentially since it was formed in 2007, I think it was. They've taken a lot of heat. Most recently, they've taken a lot of heat, both with legislative leaders in the Senate and the Assembly, and to some extent the governor. You know, it's taken a lot of heat for its role in the John Doe investigation and an audit that was recently released and reported by WPR that showed essentially the agency was slow to review past elections to see if felons participated. And it also, this audit revealed, the agency failed to craft rules for the training of poll workers.
Now, in the face of that kind of criticism, what have we heard from the Government Accountability Board?
Well, the GAB officials said the audit was fair. But they argued that, you know, this has been a really busy time for the GAB. They've had their hands full with recall elections, recounts, and the implementation and eventual suspension of a voter ID. And so essentially it's a staffing issue for them, and they've had a lot on their hands. And they say, look, you know, it's fair, but we've had a lot on our plate. Mm-hmm.
So who is leading the push to change the Government Accountability Board, and what kind of changes are they talking about to the extent we know?
There are a few people. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, I think, is certainly one of the agency's most outspoken critics, and he has suggested several times that he might look to reform it in a way that it reverts back to a partisan board, similar to what existed prior to the modern version of the mm-hmm. GAB. I mean, right now it's a panel of judges, nonpartisan judges,
right,
that is appointed by the governor. And what Robin Voss would like is it to go back to more of a partisan kind of identity.
So that's a legislative leader. What has the governor indicated about his thoughts on this?
Yeah, so the governor just this week actually floated an idea that is sort of a middle ground approach. He suggested maybe it should have a mix of partisan and nonpartisan appointees. The governor has criticized the process because, you know, he only has a small pool of judges to pick from to make these appointments. I think his argument is he'd like a larger pool of people to work with.
There's not a huge pool necessarily of retired judges. And do all of them want to be on the board? I don't know.
Exactly. I think he'd like to see that pool get larger. So I think, you know, regardless of what happens as far as reforming the GAB, I think chances are very, very good that something is going to happen. The agency we have now is not the agency we will be left with at the end of 2015.
Now, we talk every week. It seems like there's a different school-related issue that's coming up in Wisconsin politics. It's a big, complicated part of the state budget and people's daily lives in a lot of ways. What are we hearing when it comes to school, potential reforms or changes to schools from the legislature and the governor?
Yeah, so Governor Walker has said he will be pushing for a school accountability bill. He said that's one of, you know, the first things he's going to be presenting to the legislature. You know, what it'll exactly look like, we don't know at this point. But the governor has said, generally speaking, you know, he'd like all schools to be graded and that information publicly available to teachers or stakeholders or whomever, parents, whether it's a traditional public school, voucher school, or charter school.
And that's been a point of controversy. Do you have accountability for all of them? Do you have the same system? Are you comparing apples and oranges? So he's saying something at least for all of them.
Yeah, I mean he'd like Wisconsinites to go to a place and get an idea of how the schools are performing, regardless of what kind of school it is.
So how about consequences? Sometimes when you talk accountability, it's just, here's these ratings available for you so you can, I don't know, call your school board, try to make changes.
Right.
But there's also sometimes accountability involves consequences for a district.
Right. So on one side, there's this transparency issue that the governor's talked about, people having access to information. Well, the other part of that sort of equation is, well, what do we do with that information? And the issue of punishment for low performing schools has been a touchy subject. Last year, lawmakers couldn't agree on how to punish low performing schools. Now, a solution may come this year. Republican Senator Paul Farrow is actually heading a new committee that will look at that and other big issues related to school accountability and funding.
Okay. And then that's not the only school issue out there. We mentioned accountability for charter schools, voucher schools, changes that we're hearing about on that front.
Yeah. So one of the other things when we talk about charter schools, voucher schools, is that there may be an attempt this year to increase the enrollment cap in the statewide voucher school program. Right now, it's capped at 1,000 students in the statewide program. I think there will probably be an attempt to increase that cap.
And some have even called for no cap.
Right, exactly. The question is, a no cap comes with a pretty big price tag potentially, and we're going into some fiscally lean times with the budget shortfall. So I think for legislators, it's going to be this balance of, how many of these can we afford? And that remains to be seen.
On that note, and I touched on this briefly earlier, one of the biggest, most complicated things with schools in Wisconsin is how they are paid for. Is anybody thinking about tackling that?
Yeah, again, that's another hot button issue. How do we bring equality to school funding? There are complications with rural schools, urban schools. There is some inequality there in funding because of enrollment drops and so forth. Lawmakers may take another look at school funding. Senator Paul Farrow, again, we just mentioned, has indicated he is interested in reexamining how state aid is distributed. Again, that's another hot potato, so stay tuned.
We're talking to WPR Assistant News Director Noah Ovchinsky about what stories he expects to be big in Wisconsin in this coming year. And you can join in as well. What stories are you watching for in 2015 in Wisconsin news, Wisconsin politics? What is going to be making headlines? What are you hoping for or maybe fearing from the state legislature? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also share your thoughts at the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now with WPR Assistant News Director Noah Ovchinsky, giving us a preview of what he expects to break in Wisconsin news in 2015. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is the issue you are going to be tracking here in Wisconsin in this coming year? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post over at the Central Time Facebook page. Go right to a caller. We've got Jim with us in Cedarburg. Hi, Jim.
Hey, good afternoon. On the issue of technical jobs that the governor has been saying we have them, available, we just don't have the manpower. I got my property tax bill, opened it up, and there was a decrease in funding for technical schools, 39% cut. I was wondering if Noah might have something to say about that.
Jim, thanks for the call. That was something that had passed last year and even in the last budget, I think.
Yeah, property taxes is something that the governor has talked a lot about in the campaign trail last year, and he has said that he is going to make good on that promise to shrink property taxes yet again in this next budget. Again, the state faces, a budget shortfall of around $2.2 billion. So I think that, a lot of people are going to be paying attention to how that tax cut would potentially be funded. Mm-hmm. But you better believe the property taxes will absolutely be on the agenda. The governor has said income taxes, probably not. And the manufacturing tax breaks that we saw in the last budget, probably won't see a repeat of that, but the governor said definitely property taxes are going to be revisited.
And then the next question is, if you're cutting it, what expenditures funded by the property tax get cut or replaced with another revenue source?
Exactly, and that remains to be seen.
Well, staying with the money side of things, budget year, as you mentioned, all government agencies making their budget requests. One that's gotten attention in the last couple of weeks, the one from the UW system.
Right, so the system is asking for $95 million additional dollars from legislators. Given the politics of the situation with the UW system, I think that kind of request is certainly an uphill battle, given the political and financial climate that we have right now.
And we've seen tuition freezes in recent years. Is that something that's likely to continue?
Yeah, Governor Walker says he's absolutely going to, again, make good on that promise that he made on the campaign trail to freeze tuition for another 2 years. At the same time, though, he said he would like to give the UW system more flexibility when it comes to compensation and things like that, certainly as a way to become more efficient and possibly even save more money.
Now, looking at UW system leadership, they made this budget request. Are they talking about how they're going to use this money, maybe changes in the way they operate?
Well, President Ray Cross is certainly championing, I would say, a comprehensive sort of evaluation or reevaluation of how the system works in an effort to really become more efficient and perhaps save a few dollars. President Cross has talked about reforming business practices, looking at regionalizing or eliminating certain services, reforming the search process for chancellors, realigning academic programs and priorities, as well as taking a hard look at the approval process for facility improvements and buildings and the use of seg fees. And so I think certainly that's a recognition by the president that he's got to show the legislature that he and his fellow staff members of the system are serious about really reforming how it works in an effort to become more efficient, more accountable, and perhaps save a few dollars.
Go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. We've got Dennis on the line in Colfax. Dennis, hi.
Hi.
What story are you watching this year, Dennis?
I'm watching for the condition of the roads in Wisconsin. For years, we've been paying some of the top 10 highest gas taxes in the state, and our roads have just been, especially rural roads and in smaller towns, some of these roads are just terrible. So I know they're going to have to raise taxes in order to take care of this. But I hope they have the fortitude to go ahead and do that, because what business is going to want to come here if they have to drive on these roads that are just terrible?
Dennis, thanks a lot for the call. It seems like over the last couple of years, we keep hearing ideas floated often in an informal way when it comes to road funding, a lot of acknowledgement that something might need to change. What are we hearing? What's the latest that might happen this year, Noah?
Right. So the caller was just talking about rural roads. Mm-hmm. You know, the counties are spending a lot of time lobbying for more money in the transportation budget for rural roads. After all, there are a lot more miles of roads that are controlled by counties and townships and so forth than highways, for example, state highways. The Transportation Department released their budget recommendations. The governor has not come back with his budget, obviously, yet, but it could be a combination of things. And again, you know, we're taking in less money through gas taxes. The cost of infrastructure improvements is going up. And so we may see a combination of things. And just to give you sort of a sense, Rob, of what we're talking about, there's a conversation revolving around the reformulation of the gas tax to raise more money. There's the potential for more bonding to pay for road construction, taking more money from the general fund to pay for roads. That's an option. Expanding the sales tax to include automotive related purchases. That's something that's out there. A new fee for hybrid and electric car owners. That's something that the Department of Transportation has proposed. So there are a lot of potential solutions, a mix of solutions out there. It remains to be seen, though, you know, what solutions the legislature and the governor will ultimately come up with. One way or the other, though, it's the transportation budget isn't going to go away, and it's something that they have to address.
Well, before we're done, Noah, I want to get through another few issues that are kind of ongoing in the works that we're going to be keeping an eye on. The Dontre Hamilton case, you know, part of this national landscape of police-involved shootings. Some shoes have dropped as far as charges not being filed against the officer involved by the DA there. What's next?
Right. So, yeah, you just mentioned 2 weeks ago, I think it was, the Milwaukee County prosecutor declined to charge the former officer who killed Dontre Hamilton, who was unarmed. The U.S. attorney on that same day, 2 weeks ago, said that they would look at the case, that the Justice Department would look at the case and investigate it for possible civil rights violations. Mm-hmm. And so that's an investigation that will unfold this year. And it'll be interesting. It'll be something certainly that the press and a lot of people will be paying attention to, because, as you mentioned, the Dontre Hamilton, his death and the investigation comes at a time when there are a lot of controversies surrounding the killing, specifically of unarmed black men by police. And, I a lot of people are going to be paying attention to this. There have already been protests in Milwaukee and around the state, and there likely will be more in 2015.
Also, in the court realm, Supreme Court now is going to have a go at the latest John Doe on and off again investigation.
Yeah, there may actually be some kind of resolution to the John Doe investigation, which has been looking at the coordination between outside groups and the Walker campaign during the recall elections. It's essentially been in limbo for months. But the Supreme Court has decided that it will take up a few lawsuits this year that deal with some of the sort of central issues in the investigation.
Mm-hmm. And so what are those issues? What would be the implications of them ruling one way or another?
Well, what will hopefully result is a better understanding of what is and is not legal under current Wisconsin law, and whether that law has to be changed in the state to address, you know, big rulings covering campaign finance law that have been made by the U.S. Supreme Court. Essentially this, it can all be really boiled down to this, essentially. How closely can outside political groups work with campaigns until, you know, certain disclosure and donation caps go into effect? That's one of the big issues that the Supreme Court may answer in some form or another in 2015.
And the old rule, a lot of coordination was off the table. My campaign, the Rob Ferret for dog catcher, couldn't coordinate with Citizens for Better Dog Catching. We had to run our own operations. That could change to some extent.
It could. And in particular, what kind of coordination, what kinds of commercials, for instance, are allowed until, you know, disclosure and donation caps, things like that, until they come into play. So it'll be very interesting in 2015, and hopefully we'll have a bit more clarity as far as these campaign finance laws are concerned.
Now, one big maybe this year in the legislature, the possibility of what's called a right-to-work laws, effectively laws that would limit the power of now private unions, not public employee unions.
Right. Basically, it's a law that prohibits mandatory union membership as a condition of employment. If this legislation is written and submitted for consideration, I think, you know, it could prove to be highly controversial. It'll certainly make headlines, very big headlines. Now, no legislation has been submitted yet, but some key legislators are talking about passing some kind of right to work. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. The governor has said it's not a priority for him, but he hasn't said that he would veto it, for instance, mm-hmm. if it landed on his desk.
Governor Walker could soon again be candidate Walker. What are we watching for there?
Exactly. I mean, and this is going to be one of the biggest stories of 2015, most likely. You'll see the governor. I mean, he has said he's exploring a run for president. He's probably going to be doing more traveling to some of those early battleground states in the primaries, Iowa, for example. We may hear the governor talk a bit more about the election itself or some potential primary opponents. And of course, as we move through this budget process, it'll all be sort of seen through that lens of a possible presidential campaign. So very interesting timing with all of this.
Well, you take all these stories, put them together, Noah, and we're going to have stuff to do here at Public Radio.
It's not going to be boring.
It will not. Well, Noah, thanks as always for joining us, and Happy New Year.
Yeah, right back at you. It was good to be here. Thanks, Rob.
That's our news guy, Noah Ovshinsky, WPR's assistant news director, previewing the top stories coming up in 2015. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickard is back on Monday. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.